One, two, three. Roll it back, roll it back.
Anybody can talk about wine. But what you're about to experience is a grape encounter.
That's the motto here.
I didn't realize what this is.
No.
What is it?
The best of the best.
The year 2012 was literally one great grape encounter after another. Everywhere we went, we ran into legends of the wine world. If there's one thing that's absolutely certain, the biggest names in the business tend to be the least pretentious and the most fun. In celebration of an amazing year, today we'd like to present some of our favorite moments from 2012 in the very best of Grape Encounters. It really was a very good year, so let's uncork this special edition of Grape Encounters without further ado. I'm your host, David Wilson. Last year, Alex Guarachi was named Wine Importer of the Year. His company has been at the center of the importation of wine from South America and beyond. This year, it wasn't just about imports, but also about Alex's very own label, produced right here in California. Meet the man responsible for bringing us so much good wine from abroad and now right here at home.
Not many years ago, after I graduated from college, I came to the United States on a soccer scholarship. Last year, my senior year, playing for San Jose State University, and we were ranked number one in the nation. We had the best record in the nation, and I was captain of the team. I was already talking to scouts. I was ready to play professional. I wanted to be the next Pelé.
Yeah.
and I got injured during the playoffs. And it was one of those injuries that it took forever to heal.
I hate when that happens,
So I was, my soccer career was kind of over. And about a year or two afterwards, importing wines. And in those days, you could not find a bottle of Chilean wines anywhere.
But let me stop you right there. Yeah. You said you went from soccer to importing wines. Right. That's a quantum leap.
You get out of college, and you don't know what to do with your life.
Yes.
That's the way I felt. I like business, and I've always been an entrepreneur, and I be self-employed, and I grew up with wine on the table. My family is not in the wine business, but this could be a good opportunity to bring some Chilean wines to the U.S. and introduce them.
How important was wine in Chile? Was there a great deal of consumption going on when you were growing up, or has it caught on even more like it has in the U.S.?
It's a beverage that we drink at lunch and at dinner. It's part of our diet, and it's always been there. I think lately it's gone down because about 20 years ago, we just opened the barriers we opened the trade with other countries. So now we're getting other things like spirits and beers. And So I think maybe it lost a little of the momentum, but still wine is a big consumption. It's consumed at all levels in Chile.
Now, your company, TGIC Importers, is the gold standard when it comes to importing wines from South America. It's not just Chile anymore.
Right.
Let's just give listeners a rundown of all of the places that you bring wine in from.
Yeah, sure. Well, we started with Chilean, and then a few years later, I went to Argentina, and when Argentina was really in diapers. I was very lucky and very fortunate to get involved with some amazing wineries. They're all family-owned, and they were amazing winemakers. Wineries such as Archibald Serret and Bodegas Norton and Pascual Toso and Taiken. And so we work with, I've been very fortunate to work with some of the best winemakers, and we only work with family-owned wineries. They've had a long tradition of making great wines, and they own their own vineyards, so it's all state bottle. So that's kind of been our motto. And then from there, I went to New Zealand, and I started bringing New Zealand wines, and then Australia, and now we're working with a couple of wineries out of Spain. You know, I make wines now in Napa.
Yeah.
I love Napa Cabs, and give me good Sonoma Pinot. I'm a happy camper.
When it comes to wine, Americans are speaking a very different language than they did even 10 years ago. Sunset Magazine is one of the country's most respected lifestyle magazines. We sat down with editor-in-chief Katie Morgan to talk about how things have changed.
Well, we have a fabulous wine writer, Sarah Schneider, and who keeps up with all the trends. We do research, too. We know that women love to drink wine, And our magazine, 70% of our audience is women.
Isn't that a funny thing? Because the assumption often is that it's the men drinking the wine, the big reds, the Cabernets, the Syrahs, that sort of thing. But it really is the women, and even the big wines are being consumed by the women.
Absolutely. And actually what's interesting is it's not necessarily wine and food. It's wine as me time. Wine as, this is the time I can relax, I can be with my friends. It's just a different kind of thinking about the wine. So we in at the magazine have been changing up how we're thinking about wine itself, not simply with food, which is always going to be the main event, but also how do people drink wine in their off hours?
I think that's brilliant, because so many times a winemaker will say, this is a great food wine. And I say, that's good, because it's going to be my meal tonight.
Right.
And people really do that.
Absolutely.
You know, they're calorie conscious or whatever. They know there's 500 or 550 calories to a bottle. And they'll sit down and spend from what? The time they get off work until the time they go to bed, just sipping a nice bottle of wine.
Well, and they don't necessarily want to think about, I have to match this particular wine with a particular food or recipe. We have done so much of that in the magazine, but we're really looking at how to simplify that process, because people don't have the time to think that way, and you don't want them to be intimidated and feel they have to match a wine with a food.
You loved him on Queer Eye for a Straight Guy, and his hit show Chopped is purely addicting television. I recently caught up with Ted Allen and turned him on to a concept that really captured his imagination.
So let's talk about wine for a second.
Sure.
You worked for Mondavi.
For 5 years. Pleasure it was.
And one of the things that I have been preaching for about the last 3 or 4 years when it comes to wine is that we ought to be doing with wine what we do with food, which is to play with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to be very, very stodgy when it came to wine. And especially in the state of California, there wasn't a lot of blending that was going on, say, 10, 15 years ago. Now it's all about blending, and the big wineries are even offering blending programs. What do you feel about people playing with their wine at home, doing their own blending and having a little fun?
Well, actually, that's news to me, that people are being encouraged to blend wines together at home. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That's fascinating to me. And it sounds like fun.
Well, we started it here. We tell people, look, it's your wine. You paid for it. You can do whatever you want with it.
Well, you know, all the big wineries, including Robert Mondavi Private Selection, where I did most, which is the brand I represented the most, those Bordeaux style blends of the five Bordeaux grapes are huge. Everybody has one. And that blending trend I knew about. But can you give me an example of what would one blend at home? Let's say you think the Cabernet Sauvignon you have has too much tannin, so maybe you blend that with...
Drop a
little Merlot, maybe a little Pinot.
Exactly.
What fun.
And you know, it's very interesting, because I do it all the time. Dinner parties, I have a big cab that I'm serving, but somebody, one or two people don't like it that big. So quietly, out of sight, I just add a little something else to it.
I have never...
Mellow it out.
That, by many, would be considered an act of heresy, depending on which...
Not anymore.
...wine you're doing. I love that. That's what fun... You know, but you have to... I think you might need to give people a sort of a jumping-off point where you give them specific brand and a specific varietal and say, try two-thirds of, you know, Gallo this with, you know, Hess that with this Merlot and that. Do you ever blend reds and whites together?
You can.
I guess you could.
You can. It's not commonly done. And I really don't venture into that area too much. When you think about it, there are an infinite number of possibilities when it comes to blending taste with wine, except we typically leave that up to the winemaker to do that. And a lot of times, they just don't get it right, if you ask me, because, you know, you want it to be perfect and fine-tuned for your taste.
Well, they may not get it right for you, certainly. And I've always heard that in the United States that we talk dry, but we drink sweet.
Yes.
And how often is it that you get a wine that's just too mouth-puckeringly tart for you? You could, but there are other characteristics of the wine that you do like. I guess you could mellow that out with some. Why not? I've never done it myself. Ever.
Well, if you
and I'm going
to
try it.
If you think about it, I'd love to show you, by the way.
Yeah, I'd love that.
I wish we had a little time here today to do that.
What if you took, let's say you had a champagne or a California sparkler that you kind of liked, but you wanted to like make it pink, put a little bit of Pinot Noir into it.
You can do that. Now, let me tell you what I've been pushing lately is I've been adding to sparklers and Sauvignon Blancs
a little limoncello.
That's a great idea. I mean,
it's crazy good. It puts a mimosa to shame.
Well, here we cross a line from blending wine into making wine cocktails, and there are so many wonderful ones. My favorite probably being the French 75, the champagne cocktail.
You're liking this.
This sounds like a theme for a whole party,
It is, and I think people have become so afraid of messing with their wine, of doing anything with it, and yet it occurred to me probably, it must have been 4 years ago that it occurred to me, you know what, the winemakers do it, and why not take advantage of, that same idea, and make the wine, for instance, perfect for your meal.
Yes, exactly.
Because a lot of times the wine has to drive the meal. I mean, this is just my opinion, and maybe you disagree, but a lot of times the wine may, you got a great wine,
mm-hmm.
and you want to pair the food to it, so you've got to really consider what that food's going to be. But why not adjust the wine a little bit so the food is just right as well?
Absolutely.
When we return, we'll tour an enormous California vineyard by zipline. Then you can meet the legendary winemaking pioneer who was responsible for getting me interested in wine in a very big way. I'm David Wilson, and this is Grape Encounters. David Wilson here, inviting you to join me for a cruise of a lifetime. Sail from Venice to Istanbul, 10 magnificent days across the Adriatic and Aegean Seas next April 14th through the 24th, aboard the all-suite, all-balcony Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Our adventure begins with a relaxing luxury hotel night in Venice, then 10 days of gourmet dining, free unlimited beverages, including fine wine and premium spirits, free unlimited shore excursions, plus much more. Explore Montenegro, Athens, Santorini, Rhodes, Ephesus, and exotic Istanbul. On board ship, we'll have private wine tastings, food and wine pairings, cocktail parties, and talks about wine, all with me. Regent Seven Seas is the world's most inclusive luxury cruise line. The Mariner accommodates only 700 guests. The ship will sell out. To learn more about this incredible adventure and to cruise with me, call Sterling Travel at 800-777-6540 or click the link on grapeencounters.com. Paul Cullen is an amazing musician who makes truly amazing wines. Paul is the former bass player of the legendary band Bad Company. But today, he's an amazing pioneer in the creation of very special music written and produced to complement his equally special wines. Unplugged and Uncorked is Paul's answer to everyone who believes that music and wine are inseparable. Paul's wines are a celebration of life. From his luscious red Sonata Rosso to the purely irresistible Sonata Rosé to the wildly wonderful Sonata Bianco. Paul Cullen's wines are pure pleasure. Paired with his music or yours, savored with your favorite meal, or simply sipped on a porch swing. If you want to know more about Paul Cullen's wine and music, simply visit paulcullen.net. You can learn all about Paul's ambitious Unplugged and Uncorked project, buy wine, music, and even download some of Paul's most decadent recipes. Go ahead, live large. Visit paulcullen.net today. Grape Encounter year-end special continues with David Wilson. You know, I'm neither a big fan of speed or heights, but being the wine lover that I am, those fears didn't stop me from touring the amazing Ancient Peaks Vineyard by zipline. Check this out. Okay, we are back. It's Grape Encounters Radio, David Wilson, and I am now, oh my gosh, I'm being hooked up. We are at Ancient Peaks Vineyards, and we are going to do this zipline thing, and I have never ziplined in my life and really not all that excited about doing this.
So the first thing we're going to do is check the 3 points of your harness to make sure they're secure, and they are, so good job.
Okay.
And then we're going to take this carabiner, and if you see, it's got a little gadget on it.
Yeah.
And what that does is it makes sure that it doesn't unlock.
Could you weld it, please?
You don't really want to do that because then you're stuck forever.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, stuck forever.
Then what's going to happen is we have this right now. It's secured so it doesn't roll down the hill. But when we're ready, we're going to unclip you. And you're going to grab onto this handle.
Yes.
And you're going to run on down the hill.
Okay.
And then it's just going to pick you up and you'll be good to go.
And
then Yishai will be at the end. And he will break you if you need breaking, or he will run down the hill and collect you.
I probably will be broken by the time I get there. Okay.
And if you haven't heard, if you don't make it to the end, You need you to hold onto the gable to make it stop.
So if you want to take a vineyard tour, this is a very different way to do it. We're at Ancient Peaks on the central coast of California. And I'm actually looking down the hill as Carl, the proprietor here, is taking my photograph. And maybe the last photograph with me having a smile on my face. So that's it. And these handles really—I don't really need this handle, right? That
you
I'm hearing.
No, it's for security.
Okay, so I'm just gonna go down here. Can we just pray together for a moment? Okay.
Please, God.
All right. So, am I really doing this?
You're really doing.
Oh my gosh! So I'm like walking down. I'm walking down these steps, and I'm about to step off, and I am really doing this.
One,
okay.
Two, three. We can fly!
Well, Geronimo, holy smoke! I cannot believe I am doing this. I am looking to the left, where I see the vineyards below. I'm sailing over oak trees. Oh my gosh, can you hear this? Unbelievable! I must be going 9,000 miles an hour. Now I know what it feels like to be a human rocket. Okay, I'm nearing the platform. Oh my gosh, if I fell from here, I might survive. I hope somebody catches me. Oh God, whoa! Yowza! Wait, am I still breathing? Okay, Yushai is here. He's unhooking me. I actually did it. Oh wow, what a rush that was. Okay, where is my change of pants?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
In this next clip, I'm going to introduce you to the heart doctor turned winemaker that piqued my curiosity about wine more than three decades ago. Meet the legendary Stan Hoffman. My Stan Hoffman story goes all the way back to the 70s.
Fine, Happy New Year to you.
I think this is the most long-awaited interview in all the time that I have done this show. And I sampled a wine at the Top of Five restaurant at the Bonaventure Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. I had my first encounter with a sommelier. I was served a bottle of wine from a place called Hoffman Mountain Ranch. I kept the cork from that wine drinking experience. I called the Hoffman Mountain Ranch and a nice gentleman answered the phone. We had a wonderful conversation that went on for about an hour. At the end of the conversation, I apologize because I'd never even asked the man his name, and it turned out that it was Dr. Stan Hoffman. He did something that is really extraordinary no matter who you are. Asked me if I'd like to load up my car with all of my friends who had enjoyed their wine and come up and learn a little bit about wine. It was an incredible experience, and I learned more about wine and life in that one day. I asked if anybody knew the whereabouts of Dr. Stan Hoffman, and I am now sitting in his living room. Can't believe that I'm actually talking to you, Dr. Hoffman.
Yes, you are speaking to him.
So you're really the guy, right?
Guilty as charged.
Do you remember this? I mean, vaguely at least?
Yes, I do.
You were really the first really formidable winemaking operation in this area, were you not?
Yes.
But you started out, you were a cardiologist. You were very well known, associated with the UCLA Medical Center, right?
Yes.
And then we're making wine at home, and then just decided to give it all up, come up here. What makes a man take that kind of gamble? And did your wife think you were nuts?
Foolish.
You were successful from the start. That's the thing that's interesting to me.
Accidents happen.
I don't think that's the case. You had actually hired Mr. Chelichev to actually advise you, and I didn't know that at the time. Of course, I wouldn't have known who he was anyway. How did that come about? Because he really wasn't working in this area, was he?
We heard that he was available and that he was doing consultations as a winemaker. He was a foremost enologist of his era.
You had him join the team from the start then?
No, we built the winery in 1975. And he came on board in 1976 or 7.
So when were your wines originally really receiving recognition from the wine press? When did you start to really get noticed?
1976.
But the big story, I think, was the wine that I certainly remember, and I know, at least as I recall from that time, was something called Doctor's Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. And that was a just off-the-charts wine.
Yes, it was. That won a lot of awards.
And that and your Zinfandel, I think, were big wines. And, of course, this is maybe the greatest Zinfandel-growing region in the world, is it not? I mean, it doesn't get any better than here.
Well, I would like to believe it is.
Oh, you're not convinced, then?
I try to keep an open mind on subjects.
Any favorite wines here?
I'll pass on that question.
Okay, you're politically correct. And I guess this is kind of an interesting question. Do you know if there are still some of the original Hoffman Mountain Ranch vines growing on that property? Do you keep track of that? Yeah,
yes.
Still there.
All the vineyards are still...
They're all the same. They haven't changed much.
No, they're just a lot larger plants.
I'm going to let you go at that, but I just want to thank you so much. You have changed my life as far as wine is concerned. Every time you mention the name Stan Hoffman, their eyes light up.
Thank you very much.
33 or 34 years, and this is just a dream come true to sit in your living room and just talk with you for just a second.
Refreshing for our old friendship.
And, you know, maybe, who knows, I'll come back and we'll grab a barrel and we'll stomp some grapes together, huh?
We can try.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
January 1st.
Coming up, two of the most important names in the wine business. The American winemaker who won the legendary Judgment of Paris, and one of the biggest names in both French and American winemaking today. Whether it's a birthday gift, anniversary gift, or a housewarming gift, a lot of people love to give wine, but are often torn about what wine to give. So I have an alternative suggestion. And on the line is Tom Silberkleit, who created that suggestion. Tom?
Hey, David, I wanted to let you know that people are calling me to ask if we would send them an autographed copy of one of our books, The California Directory of Fine Wineries.
That's totally cool, but an autographed copy takes a little bit of time. If somebody doesn't have the time to wait for that, what else can they do?
So I highly suggest Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or independent bookstores. That's the best way to get these books.
But if they want an autographed copy, how do they do that?
You know, I'll be happy to do it. They can contact me via my website, CaliforniaFineWineries.com, and we will personally autograph a copy to whoever the folks would like.
It's the greatest photographic tribute to California's finest wineries, the California Directory of Fine Wineries. As much as it breaks my heart, I know it's impossible for you to catch every episode of Grape Encounters Radio, and that is why we archive everything we do at GrapeEncounters.com. As a matter of fact, you will find a full 3 years of Grape Encounters episodes at GrapeEncounters.com. All you got to do is go there, look to the left, there's a button that says Shows, click on it, and they are archived by month and by year. And as I said, everything we've ever done is right there for you. We've interviewed some amazing guests. We have amazing insights into the wine business and wine drinking, and it's all about making your wine drinking experience a lot more fun. That's why you want to go to GrapeEncounters.com, click on the show archive, and check out the past episodes that you missed of Grape Encounters Radio. Boisset is easily one of the most colorful figures in the world of wine. His is one of the largest winemaking families in France, and now his influence in America is a force to be reckoned with. But the thing about Jean-Charles is his infectious personality and passion for what he does. Let's have a little fun in the Red Room with Jean-Charles Boisset.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Hey, Happy New Year to you!
Here with Jean-Charles Boisset, he is the owner of Raymond, half of the known world, actually. You're the biggest wine owner in France, are you not?
Well, the biggest, I don't know, but we hope.
You'd like to be.
We are the one having the most amount of fun. That I can guarantee.
Well, that would make you the biggest then.
Well,
that would,
in terms of fun and excitement and passion and energy, thanks to you as well, David, we are certainly having a blast in the wine world. And you know what is exciting is to have wineries in different regions so that you can oscillate from wine styles and wine types and textures and feelings.
Oscillates. Wow.
Just like the flame in front of you.
Talk to me about what it's like to be a Frenchman who, you know, here in America, we
well,
tend
it's
to
like
make,
having
tend,
a, wait, whoa, 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 it's whoa. Like having a very heavy French accent. You know, Frenchman typically speaks like this.
You know what? I give up. It's not my show anymore. You've made it your show, which is good. You know, that's what you need to do. But now the French are typically considered here in America as being a bit more pretentious when it comes to wine. You're the least pretentious guy I've ever met in my entire life. You are
a wine clown, actually.
Well, I like that new denomination. Well, you're very kind to say that wine is a product of civilization and culture, and we should have fun with wine. It's an elixir of God, which we should respect, of course, and at the same time have fun with. So wine is all about the emotion, the experience, and what we build around it, like you do on your show. Why are we having fun today? Because you are having fun.
I feel like when I come here to this property that I want to slip into my pajamas before I get any further. You're kind of the Hugh Hefner of wine.
Well, what we'd love to suggest is...
But a lot younger and better looking, by the way.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not surrounded the same way yet, really.
Okay.
But what we'd love to do is to give you a robe so that you could showcase the beautiful masculinity of your chest.
All right. This may be going a bit too far. Would it be a red robe to go with this particular room, or would you serve up robes the way that you serve up wine? In other words, the robe would complement your personality.
Well, I would give you a robe, you know why? Because the wine we're trying right now, this is Generation 05,
yes,
has masculinity, has, you know, that huge, enormous grandeur and eloquence, which is very powerful. It's a thick-skinned wine, and it has that hairy chest character.
Tell me,
hence the robe.
Okay, tell me what celebrity or political figure or historic figure this wine most reminds you of.
This wine reminds me the most of Eisenhower. This wine could remind me of actually not a political figure, a man who created the most amazing things for Europe, which is called Marshall, which derived into the Marshall Plan, because this wine makes me want to march to create amazing things. And without the Marshall Plan, as an American figure, as you know, Europe would never be where it is today. So you say politics, I could think about the war, I could think about really the reawakening post-war of the rebuilding of the nation. The last political figure I may think about is a Hollywood figure who became an amazing American president, I assume. For me, he was the grandeur of America with a beautiful smile, was Ronald Reagan. So I could see
that's a good choice. That's a good choice.
And the last guy I would pick is obviously Bill Clinton as well, who has a very charming smile as well. So I would not be politically partisan. I would pick a figure of each parties who could really enjoy this wine and make even a better speech.
Would you like to know my choice?
I would die for your choice.
Really, I just have one. And it may seem a bit inappropriate because it isn't a good match with Bordeaux because it's Italian instead. Mm. But in terms of the wine, I think this is going to work.
I love
don't
the
think
choice.
That sounds like Leonardo for a lot of reasons, okay? Leonardo
painting.
Was a painter, he was a sculptor, he was an inventor, he was a thinker. So he had a lot of texture. This wine has a lot of texture,
yeah.
Okay? He also was, I think, one of the most daring thinkers of all time. This wine is very daring.
Mm-hmm.
He did very bold things, and there were no limits to his imagination. This is a very bold wine with no limitations whatsoever.
Whew, your description is way beyond mine. I'm putting a knee down, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm bowing in front of my master. My
now,
new descriptive will be Leonardo da Vinci.
Do you like that?
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it is a Bordeaux blend, so we can't really equate it to Italian wines. I still think that at least from a spiritual and intellectual structural standpoint.
Well, and Leonardo da Vinci, as you know, influenced greatly France.
Well, there's a good point. There's a good point. Okay.
So you have it
all. We're off the hook then on
that
one.
No, you are great. That's my new quote.
Plus, the wine is generations, and there are a few people like Leonardo have inspired generations. You know, he's as important and relevant today as he was when he was a young man.
And you say, David, something so important. Raymond is a fifth generation winery. Five generation in California winemaking in the heart of Napa Valley. And this is really what we want to showcase here at Raymond Vineyards in Rutherford, is the fact that wine in California has been made for a long time. And wine in California is here to remain. And the quality of California wine is fantastic. And this wine exemplifies, portrays, and is the witness of many centuries of amazing people crafting, sculpting brilliant wine here.
Okay. Next, meet the very humble Croatian-born American winemaker whose Chardonnay won the historic Judgment of Paris and catapulted California wines into the international spotlight. He is the legendary Michael Gergich.
Thank you for coming to Napa. I'm always thinking about our last meeting when I was very impressed with your ideas to cover whole United States. That has to be a hero of special will and determination. Enjoy what you are doing.
Well, to get the whole world drinking wine, but I think you have a lot more responsibility for that than anybody else. For those who may not be familiar with Mike, and I'm not sure how you could be unfamiliar with Mike, not everybody knows the history of wine. It all began back in 1976. There was an event that most people have heard of because it was chronicled incorrectly in a movie called Bottle Shock. The story was not told correctly. It at least alluded to this very important event. But I remember when it happened because it was a very big news story in America. And it was a competition that took place in Paris. And Mike, why don't you explain what happened and how that all came about?
When I came to Napa Valley 50 years ago, food and wine in Napa Valley was not as good as today. I came to this country with degree in knowledge in viticulture, business degree with 7 years of experience, and I find Napa Valley a paradise.
And I should say you came from Croatia.
Yeah, I came from Croatia, and I was very fortunate that I chose to improve my knowledge by working by the best winemakers in Napa Valley.
Let's talk about who some of those legendary winemakers were.
Lee Stewart, which was one-man operation, but he was artist winemaker. And so precision. I was so happy to start to work with him. And then I followed with the Christian Brothers, as I'm Catholic, and it was a Catholic organization that had Christian Brothers. But then I heard about Andrei Chelichev. He was called
one of the greatest winemaking names of all time.
American.
Was he the greatest at that time?
Yes.
By far?
Yes.
Yes.
He interviewed me. I tried to speak to him with broken English, and he started to talk to me in clear Croatian. He was immigrant from Russia and graduated agronomy in Czechoslovakia and then moved to Croatia, and he was making a living by singing and dancing in Croatia and learned perfect Croatian language, and his knowledge I absorbed, and I was started as a wine chemist to analyze wines, and then I was moved to the quality control. And then I moved all of this plus sanitation inspector.
Sanitation inspector.
And that was very important in food and wine sanitation.
We're speaking to Mike Gergich. I think it is a very safe statement to make. Mike, maybe more than anybody else, was really responsible for shining the international spotlight on California wine when it was just a cottage industry in the state and in the country, because of the fact that the Chardonnay that he made actually won the Judgment of Paris, much to everyone's amazement across the world. It was headline news, and it was the beginning of the beginning in the state of California. Let me ask you about Chelichev for a second. What was it that he saw in you that caused him to hire you?
He was very happy that I listened to him. I would do it. If he will tell me something, I'll do it. And that is not every day that everybody does. I was doer, and I was absorbing everything what he offered to me, so that I grew with him step by step. In 9 years, I reached almost maximum. But at that time, he retired, and I moved to another wine icon, Robert Mondavi.
Yes.
4 years, which I added his enthusiasm and his love for wine and food, that after 9 years with Sandra Chelichev and 4 years with Robert Mondavi, my inheritance, art of winemaking that I brought from Europe, it made me to feel confident that I can be on my own. So I was then hired by Chateau Montelena, where I was in charge for winemaking. I had contract for 5 years.
And they were a very important name at that time here in California.
At that time, Chateau Montelena was only the building. First day when I came there.
Oh, really? Okay, so at that point, they were just the building.
Just the building. No tanks, no barrels, no machinery.
They were just an idea.
They've been closed from prohibition.
Okay.
And first day, I get the paper, the ruler, and pencil to design winery.
Really?
Not building, but inside. And prepare winery for crush in September.
You have to design?
Design.
The infrastructure for the winemaking facility and build it and have it up and ready to receive.
And find the grape and find the people, train the people. We made wine, 72 Chardonnay, that was tasted in San Diego, comparing with three French Chardonnay, Bâtard-Montrachet, the Poulny-Montrachet, the one more tree, three French wines, and this first wine that I made at Chateau Montelina came first place. And that was good beginning, because the next year...
These were American judges.
Yeah, this was about 80 American public wine
enthusiasts.
Yeah.
It was a blind tasting,
yeah.
Meaning that they didn't know which was the French, which was the California wine.
And the next day it was tasted 73. And again, 73 came in first place.
So you knew you were onto something at that point in time.
I knew, but when you read and listen to the bottle shock, they never mentioned this. They mentioned only Paris taste.
I have complained about this more than a couple of times on the radio, the way that the movie Bottle Shock was done, because the real story is much better than the Hollywood story. It would have benefited them to tell the story correctly. They would have had a better movie. And plus, you should have starred in it.
I still have a time to make another movie.
Well, of course you do.
And before Paris tasting, Mr. Shaw from England, he was expert wine ambassador. He was teaching about wine, tasting wine, mostly in France. And he visited Chateau Montelina. And on 73 Chardonnay was in barrels. I took wine teeth. I stole some wine from the barrel and gave him to look at it. And he looked at the wine, smelled the wine, and then looked at me and turned his head around. He says, Mike, I never tasted such a good Chardonnay in my life.
Really?
Not in France. That was before Paris tasting.
But you knew throughout the whole process then that you were making a great wine.
Yes.
Did you think so?
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Next up, gadget guru Matt Dubow has been with us every step of the way in 2012. And nobody knows how to show you a good time better than Matt. And nobody is a better sport when I decide to clown around.
Fine. Happy New Year to you.
David Wilson here, inviting you to join me for a cruise of a lifetime. Sail from Venice to Istanbul, 10 magnificent days across the Adriatic and Aegean Seas next April 14th through the 24th, aboard the all-suite, all-balcony Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Our adventure begins with a relaxing luxury hotel night in Venice, then 10 days of gourmet dining, free unlimited beverages, including fine wine and premium spirits, free unlimited shore excursions, plus much more. Explore Montenegro, Athens, Santorini, Rhodes, Ephesus, and exotic Istanbul. On board ship, we'll have private wine tastings, food and wine pairings, cocktail parties, and talks about wine, all with me. Regent Seven Seas is the world's most inclusive luxury cruise line. The Mariner accommodates only 700 guests. The ship will sell out. To learn more about this incredible adventure and to cruise with me, call Sterling Travel at 800-777-6540 or click the link on grapeencounters.com. One of these days, I'm going to get in trouble for picking on pretentious people. Who knows, you know, I may go home one night, pull back the covers, and find a turned-up nose in my bed. Look, if you're a wine lover who really is put off by pretentiousness, if you want to discover more ways to have fun with fermented fruit, if you're always looking for new wine-related adventures and discoveries, then check out GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com has a huge library of audio adventures covering topics you're just not going to hear anyplace else. It's fun, fascinating, and it's free. Hey, there's something funny about this wine. So join us at the corner of fermented and demented. It's grapeencounters.com. Come on, give us a taste. When it comes to wine, it's the most fun that you can have without turning your feet purple. Grapeencounters.com.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
There are now thousands of products produced to make wine drinking even more enjoyable. And nobody knows more about these products than our very own gadget guru, Matt Dubow. Matt is one sharp cookie and a very good sport. Here are a few highlights that I just love. You're listening to our 2012 year-end special, It's Grape Encounters, with David Wilson.
Whoa! Wow.
Every once in a while, we like to put Matt on the spot, and doing it in a very big way on today's show. Matt Dubow, I gave you a list of flowers earlier on, and apparently there are those that believe you can pair flowers with wine. And so we decided that you could pair a Cabernet with a red rose, but we're going to go down the list. I'm not going to read them again. I think the listeners probably have their own guesses, and as you listen to Matt's answers, you can guess whether or not you've got it right. So, Matt, let's talk about the first one. The first one is going to be Syrah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Ooh, that's hard. These are all hard. Come on. I would never know any of these.
Okay, well, take a guess.
I'm going to say Syrah. How about a poinsettia?
That would have been a good guess, but it was actually a snapdragon.
A snapdragon?
Yeah, snapdragon. Poinsettia, I'm going to tell you what the poinsettia is, unless okay. you want to, well, no, you already guessed that, so you got that wrong. So the poinsettia is the port.
Okay.
Okay. All right. How about a sunflower? I think this one is so easy. Sunflower. You know what, Matt, we're going to have a 3-hour show.
Come on, you're putting me on the spot. This is difficult.
Oh, it's not difficult.
Wait, it's not difficult for you because you have the answers in front.
No, I took the test even before. I'm not.
How many did you get right?
I'm not cheating here. I got 3 right.
Well, I've gotten 1 right so far.
Okay, sunflower.
A Pinot Grigio.
You know that I'm going to tell you what. That's a very good guess. Now, actually, the Pinot Grigio, let's see, the Pinot Grigio matches with the hydrangea, but the sunflower is the match with the Viognier. Doesn't that seem right?
Well, now it does.
Yeah, it does. It makes some sense. So listen, you know, the point of doing all this is this. You have all of, this is just my brilliant idea, by the way. You probably didn't think of this, all right? But you have all of these different styles of products that you put on the table. You know, and different kinds of glasses. You've got fancy, you've got frivolous, you've got funny, you've got it all, Matt, okay?
Right.
I think what you need to do is you need to take each of the products that you put on the table, especially with the holidays coming up, you need to come up with a wine to match with your products. To heck with the food, Matt. This is a brilliant idea. Nobody does this.
Right. Now, brilliant, that's kind of stretching it.
The subject that I want to talk about just for a little bit is what women want, because women are so important to the wine drinking world, probably more important than men by far. And when it comes down to the question of what women want, there's nobody on earth that you would want to pose that question to more than the gadget guru, Matt Dubow, the man who knows what women want.
Hi, David.
Hey, Matt.
I can't claim to be an expert on that
No. Well, what do you mean? You know what? It's amazing because when you go to epicstyle.com, there are so many products for women. We'll get into that. But I thought it would be fun, Matt, because we haven't done this in a little while, but I sort of wanted to return to our game show theme.
Okay.
For just a few minutes, and just test your aptitude a little bit about women and wine.
Go for it.
All right. Well, there was a survey recently of 4,300 women in France, Germany, Japan, United Kingdom, and the United States, and they asked them all kinds of questions about wine. So among the U.S. respondents, what percent of women do you think said that they drink wine at least once a week? And you can hit it within 10%, and I'll score it as a win.
70%.
No. What do you think? Higher or lower?
Higher.
It is higher, Matt.
Are we going 80?
No.
90?
Yes, 93%.
Wow.
93% of women say they drink at least one glass of wine a week. Wow. Now, here's the question.
Okay.
Do they drink that glass of wine more often with a meal or more often to just relax at the end of the day?
I would say to have a glass of wine just to relax at the end of the day.
You're wrong. It's actually 80% said they drank the wine with meals, and 67% said they do it to relax. Now
I'm over 2.
You're over 2. Matt is the king of the cork cages. He didn't do so well in the ladies department last week.
Let's not bring that up again.
All right. Well, you know what? They can listen to the podcast and see for themselves, Matt.
I thought you were taking that one down.
No. but I have to say that you've got to do better with cork, because cork is your thing. You are the king of cork.
I think you're setting me up again.
Probably so. But after all, you did invent the cork cage, and you sell an ungodly amount of those, or maybe a godly amount, as the case may be. And so I would think that cork would be something that you live and breathe.
Okay, you're really building this up now.
You have been set up for a fall, Matt Dubow. All right, so are you ready for the first question?
Let's go.
The average life of a cork tree is, and I'm going to give you some choices, 100 years, 200 years, 250 years.
I am just going to take a wild guess and say 200 years.
Yeah, that is a wild guess. No. The actual length of the average lifespan, rather, of a cork tree is 250 years.
Okay.
I would have thought you would have gone for the oddball one that had the 50 in it, but that's not the case. All right, here's a true or false.
Okay.
True or false, more than 50% of all cork is grown in Portugal and Spain.
Oh, yes, I agree with that.
Ta-da! That is correct, Matt Dubow.
Thank you.
And is it true that more than 50% of all cork cages come from epicstyle.com? More like 100%.
No.
There are knockoffs.
You can find them at your local store as well.
But you know what? That those knockoff cork cages are kind of like synthetic cork, don't you think? Screw caps. They are the screw caps of cork cages. All right. True or false? The cork industry is a $1 billion industry.
I'm going to say no.
Not only are you wrong, Matt Dubow, but you are wrong in the wrong direction. It is a $1.5 billion industry.
Wow. Wow, that's really surprising with all the wineries starting to use screw caps and synthetic.
Well, it may go down.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, that's a wrap for the year, but there's plenty more where that came from. We'll see you next year. Don't worry, it's only a week away.
Fine, Happy New Year to you.